Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puriza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Group files a lawsuit in a European country against an Iranian civilian. The country arrests the man and keeps him in total isolation on baseless allegations. This is the story of Hamid Nouri, who was illegally imprisoned by the Swedish government in 2019 because of a lawsuit that the terrorist Mujahedin-e-Khalq organization had filed against him. They accused him of involvement in the execution of the members of the group in Iran in the 1980s, an accusation that has not even been proved. Hamid Nouri is called the most isolated prisoner in the history of Sweden, as he has not even been able to meet with his family. In the meantime, Nargis Mohammadi, an Iranian woman who has been in and out of prison for committing various crimes against the Iranian nation and the country's Islamic establishment, has sent a letter to the Swedish government while in prison. She has thanked Sweden for putting Nouri on trial.
Sweden is a role model for freedom, democracy, and powerful civil society. Your country hosted one of the biggest symbols of justice for Iran in these years.
Mohammadi, who was awarded the Nobel Prize last week, has been criticized by Nouri's son as she has supported a terrorist group.
Nargis Mohammadi is a prisoner in Evin. She has written a letter to the Swedish Prime Minister. Her husband also met with the King of Sweden. She's trying to bolster my father's trial, but she knows well that she's actually helping us with her stupidity, and she's making it clear which is notorious, the Evin prison or Sweden. A stupid enemy is good for these times.
These developments coincide with the trial of MEK members in Tehran for killing more than 17,000 Iranian civilians. The proceedings are aimed at bringing the criminals and those who have supported them to justice. Farzana Ashurgan, Tehran.
Yemen's armed forces have announced successful attacks on military targets in occupied Palestine. According to a statement by Yemen's armed forces, the latest attack saw a large number of drones targeting military sites and installations in the occupied city of Vashrash, which Israel calls Eilat. The latest attacks come just one day after Yemen's armed forces once again targeted two Israeli ships in the Red Sea. The two ships were destined to unload shipments in the port of Vashrash.
The Yemeni armed forces, with the help of God Almighty, carried out military operation against sensitive targets in the al-Rashrash area in southern occupied Palestine with a large batch of drones. The Yemeni armed forces confirmed the continuation of their military operations against the Zionist entity until its aggression against our steadfast brothers in the Gaza Strip stops.
Over the past month, Yemen's naval and armed forces have captured or attacked several Israeli-bound ships in the Red Sea. The continuous Yemeni attacks have caused some shipping firms to pause Red Sea shipments and travel. Yemen says it will continue to target Israeli-linked or Israeli-bound ships until food and humanitarian aid enters Gaza.
The Yemeni armed forces would like to ensure that all ships and international shipments will be safe to travel to all ports except for Israeli ports. These ships must always keep their naval navigation system on. The Yemeni armed forces will not hesitate to target any ship that refuses to follow these instructions.
According to Israeli financial experts, the Israeli economy has suffered an approximated $4 billion in loss due to the Yemeni blockade on all Israeli shipments.
Israel has called on the U.S. to take military actions against Yemen in order to secure its shipments in the Red Sea. But after witnessing the military capabilities of Yemen's armed forces, neither Saudi Arabia nor the UAE or any any other country dares to attack Yemen. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Turkish doctors, medical students, and healthcare workers gathered in Istanbul on Saturday for a silent march against the Israeli regime's attacks on hospitals and medical staff. The protesters lamented that the Palestinian health workers are struggling to save the lives of the victims of the attacks on Gaza amid lack of medical supplies, anesthesia, and fuel due to the Israeli blockade on the strip.
We choose to march silently as medical professionals. We are doing this for 4 weeks. Inshallah, it will be fifth week in here. We are doing this in 36 different cities in Turkey and 26 different cities all around the world. For example, in London, in Chicago, Sydney, Kuala Lumpur, Paris, etc. We try to raise our voice against to targeting the healthcare professionals in Gaza, the targeting the hospitals, because as a doctor, the first goal is primum non nocere, because do not harm to anyone. But in Gaza, the forces are targeting medical places directly, so we try to raise our voice against it.
The march was held in collaboration with the Healthcare Workers for Palestine, a collective of healthcare workers who stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people. It also held similar marches in 26 cities around the world. The march was also held in 36 cities in Turkey. Demonstrators wore lab coats with red handprints on them to highlight the plight of Gazans and the struggle of the region's healthcare.
Our job is about people's lives. We are trying to save the people's life, and Israel killed the people, and we are all against the killing of people. We are all against the genocide in Palestine, and we will be here until the genocide stops, and we won't stop talking about Palestine.
The protesters carried banners saying the targeting of hospitals and medical team is a war crime. So far, Israel has killed more than 280 medical workers, including doctors, and rendered many hospitals unusable in Gaza. I am a doctor, not a target. This is the slogan used by Turkish doctors and medical field workers, who gave assurance that they will press ahead with their protests until a ceasefire is reached. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Rome hosted a new conference on the Israeli occupation of Palestine. The initiative, dubbed How to Get Rid of a Population, was named after former professor of European Contemporary History at the University of Turin, Diana Carminati's eponymous book. Carminati's thesis in her recently published book was that the basic dynamics at work in Palestine are the same as those in US, Canada, and Australia history. These three countries and Israel are all, quote, settler colonial nations, and their plan since day one of their invasion was to get rid of all the people already on the land.
In my book, I've tried to describe how invaders get rid of entire populations by examining facts and evidence that took place in a span of time from the 70s to today. The strategy that has been adopted so far aims at gradually mollifying the people who were already on the land with subsidies and other in-kind benefits. The invaders get rid of those people, or at least concentrate them into increasingly shrinking areas, such as the Gaza Strip.
Academics pointed out that through a false narrative of manipulation, Western governments and media had been trying to persuade the public opinion that the start date of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is October 7, 2023.
Perché si fa partire?
Why do they lie so blatantly? The abomination began at the start of the last century when UK-backed Zionists sent their settlers to Palestine. After killings of Palestinians and unrest in 1947, an abusive UN resolution called for the partition of Palestine into Arab and Jewish states. Had the Palestinians been asked if they intended to share their land?
During his tour of the West Asia to bolster the United States' influence in the region, White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan met the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia bin Salman on Wednesday to discuss the war in Gaza and future relations between Tel Aviv and Riyadh. Some experts believe that Israel's ongoing onslaught on Gaza has impacted the so-called Abraham Accords, putting it on hold. The genocide against Palestinians has pushed many to question the future of Arab countries' normalization of ties with Tel Aviv.
These accords were designed by the United States and Israel in an effort to create an anti-Iran bloc. I don't think this plan will succeed, also due to the role China is willing to play in the region. My take is that these accords won't go any further.
Also on Thursday, a protest by a group of pro-Palestine activists was held outside the headquarters of giant defense and aerospace group Leonardo in the Italian capital. Tens of people with banners and placards called on Leonardo to stop fueling a genocide in Gaza by providing weapons to Israel. Max Civili, Rome.
Amid Israel's relentless strikes on the Gaza Strip, many Afghans have gathered to show support for Palestinians. They vehemently denounced the Israeli regime's brutalities and showed their unwavering solidarity with Gaza. The demonstrators proudly brandished the flags of Palestine and displayed banners reading, "Down with Israel and down with USA."
This war is backed by the U.S. That's why it is still ongoing. Nowhere is safe in Gaza today. The Israelis bomb schools, they bomb buildings, they bomb hospitals with support from the U.S.
We've gathered here to call for the cessation of the oppression of the Palestinian nation. To stop the murder of women and children, all Muslims should unite and support Palestine. We are all willing to go to Gaza if made possible by our government.
While expressing their unwavering support for the Palestinian nation and their cause, the demonstrators also voiced their deep-seated frustration at the international community's failure in addressing this crisis and issued a stern condemnation of their inaction.
International organizations are just a tool to legalize horrible crimes committed by arrogant states. They have failed us in the case of Gaza, and this blot is on their hands too. We shouldn't expect such organizations to help, and we Muslims must take action.
Since October 7th, Israel has been committing genocide in Gaza. This demonstration is a ripple in the wave of protests that have taken place worldwide. They all chant the same message, that they stand united with Palestinians.
Through this gathering, Afghans are sending a strong message to the global community. They underline that they stand by Palestinians and support them in the fight for their rights and freedom amid Israeli occupation and onslaughts. Abdullah Mirzad, Kabul.
The world's largest gathering dedicated to refugee issues. After 4 years holding its second meeting, bringing together member states, civil society, financial institutions, private companies, and more than 300 refugee advocates. An important participant, Iran. According to UNHCR data, as of mid-2023, the Islamic Republic has been the largest refugee-hosting country in the world.
There's no temporary solution to the refugee crisis. The UNHCR and the international community have to take serious measures for refugees to be able to go back home. The Islamic Republic of Iran has been hosting refugees for the longest time in history. Over the past 45 years, and even more recently since the developments in Afghanistan in 2021, my country is hosting the largest number of refugees in the world, providing them with health care services and education for their children, despite the fact that we are under harsh U.S. sanctions ourselves.
But while the protracted crises in places like Afghanistan, Myanmar, Syria, and Ukraine were discussed, the failure of the UN Security Council to confront the major human catastrophe in Gaza became the most important topic of the day, with a second meeting held on the sidelines of the Global Refugee Forum, focusing only on Gaza.
Women and children have been killed. The humanitarian ceasefire was violated by the Israeli regime. Today, the United States, is openly supporting the killing of women and children by Israel. In the Middle East, we are witnessing further expansion of war, the war which in any moment would turn into explosion and get out of control.
More than half of Palestinians have had to leave their homeland, and they expect the UN pave the way for their return. The world is watching the people of Gaza as they are running out of time and options, facing bombardment, deprivation, and disease. Palestinians have been waiting for the UN to take action for over 75 years, and today they are facing the darkest chapter of their history since 1948.
The issue of Gaza remained on top of the agenda of Iran's foreign minister as he held bilateral meetings with his counterparts from Saudi Arabia, Japan, Indonesia, Tunisia, Kuwait, and Lebanon, as well as the Prime Minister of the Vatican, and most significantly, the High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, during which the humanitarian crisis in Gaza was discussed, as well as the tragic situation the world is facing in 2023 with an unprecedented number of displaced people.
The UNHCR has announced that for the first time in history, the number of displaced people has surpassed 110 million, with over 36.4 million refugees. The Global Refugee Forum 2023 is hoping to provide an opportunity and the basis for the return of these refugees back home. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Geneva.
The 19th meeting of the International Muslim Forum of Russia and the Islamic World took place in the presence of religious scholars, ambassadors, and political figures from 18 countries in the Moscow Cathedral Mosque on Tuesday. The meeting was overshadowed by the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, and this was the main theme of speeches by Sunni and Shia scholars and participants in this summit. At the beginning of the meeting, Mufti Ravil Gaynuddin, the Grand Mufti of Russia, voiced his support for the resistance of the people of Gaza against the Zionist regime and called for Muslims to join hands to help stop the genocide in Gaza.
We call on the parties to the conflict to refrain from escalating it, ensure security, stop the death of civilians, and move towards a full dialogue based on the peace initiatives of regional and world powers, including Russia.
Hujjatul Islam Hamid Shahriari, the Secretary General of the Iran-based World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought, noted that according to the Quran, justice is the highest and the most important social value that God has emphasized. The Iranian cleric pointed out that now is the time to appeal to the peace-loving and free peoples of the world to help support the Palestinians. He stressed that the Palestine conflict is the top priority of the Islamic world.
The role of the clergy is very important nowadays, because we now we can see the cruelty all over the world, and normally people understand who is who, and this is the first time that we can see how many people in the streets against the cruelty, against the killing of women and children in Gaza Strip, to follow the order of Quran, the order of Allah, to keep from cruelty of the world, to see that the justice is very important nowadays for the world.
Ambassadors of Iran and Palestine denounced the barbaric crimes committed by the Zionists during the past 75 years as a disgrace to humanity.
International organizations have failed to fulfill their role, including the UN Security Council. The role and influence of religious scholars are now significant. Gaza is not just a Muslim issue. It is an issue of humanity, and it's not related to religion. Both Muslims and Christians, everyone should bear responsibility for this, not to mention the Jews. There is no justification for killing vulnerable people, and everyone must do their best to put out the flames of war.
We refuse to leave our land. We know what does it mean, the immigration. We suffered long, more than 75 years. Therefore, every Palestinian in Gaza Strip, they continue to be in their land in spite of all Israeli attacks.
participants also spoke about the need to create an interreligious charter of traditional spiritual values, as well as the role that spiritual leaders can play in resolving the armed conflict in Palestine.
The forum provides a platform for religious leaders to speak out for humanism and the moral foundation of human existence. That comes at a time when those issues are in the spotlight amid the Israeli genocide in Gaza, where people expect the world to help them in the face of the regime's brutalities. Marina Kartunova, The Moscow Grand Mosque.
The Limelight. Experts in Britain have warned that measures designed to cut the number of migrant workers and their dependents entering the United Kingdom may exacerbate staff shortages within the National Health Service. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. The Home Secretary, James Cleverly, has announced a package of measures designed to cut the number of migrant workers and their dependents entering the United Kingdom, making it far harder for employers to bring in overseas staff, including in the National Health Service and social care sector. The Home Secretary presented a five-point plan in which the minimum salary requirement for a skilled worker visa would rise to £38,700, while the rule allowing the most needed professions to be hired at 20% below the going rate would be scrapped. The move, which the government estimates will help reduce net migration by 300,000 a year, marks an attempt by James Cleverly and Prime Minister Rishi Sunak to rescue the Conservative Party's flagging reputation for controlling immigration. But experts have warned it also risks causing further chaos in the already stretched healthcare sector and damage the UK's long-term growth prospects. The Home Secretary, James Cleverly, told MPs in the House of Commons on Monday, 4th of December, "Migration is far too high and needs to come down. Enough is enough." Cleverly added, "Today I can announce that we will go even further than those provisions already in place with a five-point plan to further curb immigration abuses that will deliver the biggest ever reduction in net migration. In total, this package, plus our reduction in student dependence, will mean about 300,000 fewer people will come to the United Kingdom in future years than have come to the UK last year." Along with raising the salary threshold and scrapping the shortage occupation list, James Cleverly announced that social care workers would no longer be allowed to bring their dependents when they come to work in the United Kingdom. He also said people living in the United Kingdom, including British citizens, would now be allowed to sponsor family members to move to the United Kingdom only if the person living in the United Kingdom earned £38,700, up from £18,600 currently. Finally, the government is asking the Migration Advisory Committee to review the rules for those who have completed undergraduate degrees in the United Kingdom. A spokesperson for Downing Street called the package the biggest clampdown on legal migration ever. They added, "We believe this is a package which will enable us to significantly reduce numbers whilst achieving economic growth." It forms one part of a two-part plan to reduce the numbers of people coming into Britain legally and illegally. This week, Home Secretary James Cleverly is likely to fly to Kigali in Rwanda to sign a new asylum treaty with Rwanda, with ministers ready to bring forward new legislation in an effort to finally kickstart the government's Rwanda plan. Sources say number 10 Downing Street originally intended to announce a more moderate package of restrictions on legal migration, but buckled under heavy pressure from conservative backbenchers and Robert Jenrick, the immigration minister. Downing Street denied, however, that the five-point plan was the same one that Robert Jenrick had reportedly lobbied the Prime Minister to adopt on multiple occasions in recent weeks. The website lbc.co.uk has also covered this same story. The Home Secretary, James Cleverly, has unveiled the government's plan to crack down on legal migration, which includes raising the minimum salary threshold for a visa from £26,200 to £38,700. Speaking to Parliament, James Cleverly said, the government is taking more robust action than any government before to reduce legal migration. Home Secretary James Cleverly said this will ensure people will only bring dependents whom they can support financially. Healthcare and care workers will be exempt from the new changes. James Cleverly told the House of Commons that the net migration is far too high and that a series of measures are being brought in to stop people from jumping the queue. The series of measures that will be brought in from the spring will mean more than 300,000 people who came to the United Kingdom last year would now not be able to do so. The hike in the threshold to £38,700 is £3,000 more than the median salary at the Immigration Minister Robert Jenrick's proposed level. People will be surprised at how strong a package it is, a senior White House source told The Telegraph. Immigration is a hugely important issue to voters, and Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has one eye on the forthcoming general election and the other eye on the right of his party, whose members have demanded tougher action on immigration and believe it's a pathway to electoral success. Net migration hit 745,000 in the year to December of 2022, keeping levels at record highs. It is well above the roughly 300,000 the figure hovered around in the years before Brexit. Reacting to the announcement on Monday, 4th of December, former Home Secretary Suella Braverman welcomed the measures but said the package had arrived too late. Writing on X, formerly known as Twitter, Suella Braverman said, "I welcome the measures announced today to cut net migration. They are a step in the right direction. But we need to be honest, this package is too late and the government can go further." She claimed the delay in implementing these measures means it will not be possible to see a fall in the number of migrants before the next general election, and that proposals should go further, such as introducing an annual cap on net migration. Suella Braverman added, "I put forward similar measures 6 times in the last year. I'm glad the Prime Minister has finally agreed to introducing some of them now, but the delay has reduced their impact."
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, as the Zionist regime continues its genocide, the United States promises it more weapons and its continued support. Well, this was said by the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, who is in the Israeli entity and meeting with the War Cabinet. But as the American Zionist genocide continues, so does the resistance inside of the occupied Palestinian territories and beyond. I'd like to welcome my guests to this program to help me look at all of this. Anthony Hall, professor of globalization, Lethbridge University, out of Lethbridge. And Gilbert Doctorow, independent international affairs analyst, out of Brussels. Thank you both for being with me. Well, let me start this off with Anthony. Why do you think Austin has gone to Israel again at this time?
Well, who can really know? I'm sure there's so much going on underneath the radar. What we see is a full-fledged assurance that the U.S. is behind this assault on Gaza, that the weaponry will continue, that the link between these two countries, which are almost now a merged country under a higher polity called Zionism, that this will continue. And, of course, he wants to get some kind of Arab unity to fight the, let's call them Yemenis, not the Houthis anymore. They do control a country called Yemen. And of all the Arab countries, they are the most courageous. They are the most unstinting in showing support. Of course, this is going to embarrass other Arab countries that aren't showing anywhere that level of commitment, putting lives on the line to save the menaced people in the Gaza Strip. So we can talk about all kinds of underpinnings and context. That's my reading of it initially.
Okay. Well, Gilbert, and based on what the Americans are saying and doing, isn't this genocide as American as it is Israeli?
Well, yes, it certainly is. And I think that is appreciated by the Global South, not only by the immediate Muslim neighbors of Palestine. The United States has lost face internationally. The utter hypocrisy of everything the United States has said about the Russian-Ukraine war being so horrible and so murderous, that has all been wiped away by a different order of magnitude of violence, destruction, and ethnic cleansing that Israel has been practicing with American support ever since October 7th. So that is one thing. The other thing to mention is that within the United States, the complicity and the active participation, actually, of United States military in support of Israel's devastating activities in Gaza, that is something that has affected the broad public, and particularly young people. How long this can go on really depends on factors outside of the region. It depends on the political determinations within Washington, whether Biden's plans to be reelected next year are being totally destroyed by the disaffection of young people and young Democrats with respect to this war. And so America is a very big factor in the war's possible continuation or ending, whatever the defense minister Austin says. And there is more to it than meets the eye. If this Israeli offensive stops in its tracks. It also could be caused by something that's happened in the last several days, which is a minor thing, one would think, but considering the scale of devastation and death that Israel has wrought, the outrage in the neighboring countries, and the shock that is felt by even in the least tender-hearted countries of the West when they watch on BBC or CNN or Euronews what Israel is perpetrating in Gaza. There is shock and dismay. But all of these big picture issues may be nothing compared to what is happening or may yet happen within Israel over the murder of the three hostages who had somehow been freed, somehow come home, they thought, and were murdered by Israeli army. That has had a very big effect on the Israeli public. It has proven the utter falseness of Mr. Netanyahu's government when it declares that releasing the hostages is a priority. And I might add, it has a different dimension to the Israeli activities. Yes, they are very regretful if they slaughtered their own, but it's still more important that they fired on people who had raised the white flag.
Right.
And that tells you something about the nature of this government, about the nature of the war ministry and the senior military of Israel.
Indeed it does. Stay with me, Gilbert. So let me get Anthony back in on this discussion. Well, Anthony, please. The Zionists released footage claiming that it had found a major tunnel of the resistance. However, the resistance said that they were too late with their discovery because that particular tunnel was the one used on October the 7th for the Al-Aqsa flood operation, and it's a very limited tunnel. Your thoughts on this overall, because on the one hand, they're trying to show that they have accomplished something. On the other hand, one could ask, well, first of all, why would a people need tunnels to begin with unless they're imprisoned?
These tunnels are something to behold. I remind myself that Ho Chi Minh, the North Vietnamese, had tunnels. How did they withstand that enormous bombardment, that carpet bombing? They had tunnels. And so Gaza, the Hamas, has dug tunnels. Wonder what the history of that digging is. And this is a very strong card. This changes everything, really. And I think the Israelis are sort of demonstrating they really don't know what's going on. And, of course, the question now of the tunnels possibly drowning the hostages. Hamas has reported that 60 of them have been killed already, mostly in the bombardment. Now, this question of the United States and what is going on in the United States, think of the reality that in these forthcoming elections, so say Biden loses, and he will lose lots of support, but who are the contenders? The contender is Trump, who is, tries to exceed all others in pledging allegiance to Israel and delivering Israel what it would like in terms of capital recognition, the capital, national capital, or the Golan Heights. And number three is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who represents a major alternative for the American voters. He's now going independent. But even he has this overwhelming commitment that he makes very clear to Israel, right or wrong, whatever. This has to underline for the U.S. public that their government is not really a democratic government when it comes to this issue. There are no major options being presented. Now we have three candidates, all the same. So this signals to people that this Zionist power is out of control, that it dominates the opposition parties or the alternative parties, and as far as hoping for elections we know are corrupt, and they used COVID as a means to throw the last election and mail-in ballots and all. And why would we expect this coming election to be any better? Now, this demonstration of what the Israeli military is all about, I think this firing at three Israeli, do we call them hostages? Obviously, they were freed, they'd escaped, whatever. But there they were, taking their clothes off, trying to demonstrate they have no weapons, with the white flag, and they're shot by the IDF. And that is a demonstration not only for Israeli public opinion, but for the world, that this Israel fighting force, which is 100% backed by the United States, sort of created, the United States really created Israel. Britain created Israel as a outpost, as a colonial outpost for the West with the Suez Canal. And then after World War II, the U.S. took over this colonial project and developed, founding of Israel in 1948 began a genocide, which is continuing now, which is culminating now. So things are emerging that show the poverty of anything approaching the rule of law in the world right now, how deeply depraved our society as a whole, our global society, has become.
Yes, indeed. Well, Gilbert, what about the when we see the resistance, the Palestinian resistance? It is true that Israel is definitely killing a lot of kids, a lot of women, a lot of civilians in general, but they are really not crushing the resistance as that was their goal when going into that. I want to look at this and that even still, the resistance is still able to send rockets to the occupied Palestinian territories. I want to look at that side of things and how are they able to do that with all of the firepower that the Israeli regime has?
Of course, admirable, but let's not get confused about who is who and what is what. That Hamas has stayed this far and has resisted and found ways to escape the awful onslaught of Israel, that's very, very good. However, that is not a victory. The damage that they have done to the IDF appears to be rather paltry compared to the damage that Israel has done to the Gaza Palestinians. 20,000 people dead. That is not offset by a missile here and there that may have succeeded in getting through the Iron Dome and striking somewhere or other on an empty street in Israel. That is not war. That is simply an expression of anger. And it is, it's not going to resolve the conflict by Hamas having a few missiles to fire here and there. The question is, what else is the greater community in the Middle East prepared or able to do? And as we see, aside from a lot of jawboning and posturing, they haven't done much. Iran made a remarkable and very important proposal to impose an oil embargo on Israel, and even that did not pass in OPEC. And so the only economic war on Israel has been initiated in the last few days or weeks precisely by the Houthis or Yemen in their missile strikes on container ships and in their boarding parties on other ships passing through the Red Sea. That is, to this point, the most effective way of getting the attention of the world and bringing to the attention of the world the economic cost that this war may bring, not just to the neighborhood, but to the whole world, if it doesn't turn into a regional and global kinetic war.
Well, Anthony, let's talk about the Yemenis, because actually today they stopped two more ships headed to the regime. Yemeni military spokesman said, if Gaza does not receive the food and medicine it needs, all ships in the Red Sea bound for Israeli ports, regardless of their nationality, will become a target for our armed forces. I'd like to hear your thoughts about this and the effectiveness of not of what they're doing.
Well, the Yemenis stood up to a huge battering where the projectile at the front was Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia, of course, was backed up with U.S. weapons. This group within Yemen called the Houthis, we were referring to them as the Houthis, they have prevailed. And to my way of thinking, they have demonstrated right up to this point a tremendous commitment and determination to stand up against something intolerable. And it's really kind of interesting that the whole world, the only real example we have of a country, of a polity that will go beyond words and pronouncements and declarations and votes, that will actually take a stand, are the Yemenis in this situation. And so I cannot help but look at that as a heroic statement, a heroic stand that should send a signal now that, you know, we are going deep now into this conflict. It seemed that with the firing on the three young Palestinian, three young Israeli men who had the white flag up, that there was a moment there that the domestic pressure on Netanyahu, that it seemed it was possible there would be some kind of ceasefire, some kind of truce, something to deal with the larger picture and establish a procedure. But with Lloyd Austin coming in the way that he did, a full-fledged, you know, salesman for the military-industrial complex, having worked for all these arms agencies, which are making a killing on this, and he acts essentially like somebody who got in the job by affirmative action. He's really done nothing to demonstrate much thoughtfulness or leadership, and he's acted true to form as a delivery boy to the U.S. Israeli coalition to simply say, continue on, it's all right with us, we're with you. You were our project, Israel was our military outpost in the Middle East, you still fulfill that function, we're behind you. Biden is, you know, all this talk about the political trouble he's in, but there's no alternative in the whole U.S. system to vote for anything other than this complete backing of the most extreme Israeli government we've ever seen. This is the most awesome, terrible spectacle I've seen in my lifetime of a kind of billboard genocide taking place with Al Jazeera and Press TV covering the nitty-gritties of it. It's amazing. I don't think the people in the power vacuum, in the little bubble of power, can understand how throughout the world this is a symbol of the deep depth of the total, you know, monstrous consciousness of those who are so used to conducting power of life and death over the human population that somehow or other this is going to be expressed, and it's not going to find some expression in the United Nations, or it's got to be in the streets. Mm-hmm. It's got to be coalition building like we've never seen before on a global basis.
Okay.
And it's not always going to be polite.
All right, stay with me. Well, Gilbert, continuing to look at the resistance in general, I want to look now at Hezbollah, which started its attacks one day after the beginning of the Al-Aqsa flood offensive. Your assessment of what Hezbollah is doing, because they have opened up, of course, another front. The Israelis have to deal with the northern side of this, and, of course, the settler colonists who were near that border had to be evacuated. How costly do you think this is for the Israelis, this other front with Hezbollah?
Well, a moment ago we speak of the Houthis, who in Western press are all described as rebels. My fellow panelist has very correctly equated Houthis with Yemen as a state. So that's the same thing comes up with Hezbollah. It is presented as wild radicals. However, like Hamas also within Palestine, the leaders of these various movements have been some very sophisticated people. And so it is with Hezbollah, and they're doing their calculations. It was estimated that at the start of the conflict back in the early days of October, that Hezbollah has an arsenal of 100,000 missiles or more capable of overwhelming the Iron Dome and doing massive destruction in Israel. However, that would come at the cost of massive destruction to Lebanon. and that is pretty obvious. So they have, the leaders in Hezbollah have made the point that we can do some serious damage if we really want to Israeli forces. They have pinned down perhaps a quarter of the Israeli army in the north towards the border. They have forced the evacuation of perhaps 50,000 Israeli settlers who were in residences near the border with Lebanon, but who are within reach, easy reach, of Hezbollah artillery, not to mention missiles. So they have made a point, but they have not gone too far. They have not gone beyond a certain red line, which would threaten a full-blown war with Israel, which they don't want, because it's going to be a very costly war, a costly war in lives and materiel, and better avoided. But that is true of Iran as well. It's true of all of the Middle East players. Nobody wants this to become a regional war. Nobody wants an escalation. And so all the actors are proceeding very cautiously. One thing to say on behalf of this caution is that if, for example, the neighbors or Iran had gone in at once and responded to the devastation which Israel was already in the first days of its offensive wreaking in Gaza, then it would not have been clear to the world at large what the true face of the Israeli military is and their ambitions of ethnic cleansing. That would not have been clear. Now it's perfectly clear. If this should rise, if it should escalate to a regional war, the powers in the world, the world public opinion, is well informed of what the basic issues are and who is who. And that is something that only could have come about with a certain amount of indulgence and patience. We all are horrified that 20,000 Palestinians have lost their lives. And that still leaves 2,280,000 Palestinians who have not lost their lives. And that is has to be the objective of all reasonable people at this time, to do everything possible to stop this war in its tracks. And as I said, for political reasons, domestic the United States and all of American foreign policy is only a projection of domestic issues. It may well be that despite the big words of Mr. Austin, that the United States is privately counseling Israel, not the Netanyahu government, to stop this or else, the or else being a massive pressure on Israel as a whole to wisen up. They are behaving as if they're the United States. The United States has gotten away with murder, literally, on a massive scale for the last 25 years when it's played the role of the world's only superpower. Israel is not the world's only superpower, or second superpower, or third superpower, and however much support it gets to the United States, it cannot get away with murder. Okay. So I think that that the restraint that's been shown until now has served a constructive purpose.
Okay, let me see. Anthony just raised his hand. 30 seconds, Anthony. Okay. Go ahead. I'm just about out of time, but go ahead.
There's one person who would like to see a regional war. That's Benjamin Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu, in the events of October 7, where Israel plays